Hi guys, welcome back to the Ojogo Bonito podcast hosted by me, Jay Cron. Today we've got Mr. Ferguson.
Hello. We've beaten Mr. Jennings to the punch today. We're still expecting him, hopefully. But of course, if he doesn't show up, then this is going to age really horribly in about 10 minutes.
I hope not. But wow, football's been very, very interesting over the past 7-odd days. Apologies for not releasing an episode last week. We had a few studio
gremlins. Our mixing desk just decided that it was... I don't think it could handle Man United beating City. And it just completely overloaded. So yeah.
And we'd like to give a special mention to Microsoft, because they released an update which corrupted all our devices. So we have the losers of the week, Microsoft. Although we have a Microsoft sponsor, it's called. Please, Microsoft, we do not represent the views of the school. Just kidding. Right. Football. We've had cup competitions. We've had all-star exhibition games. We've had the lot.
It feels strange to think that that's actually only been a few days ago now.
Exactly.
Because football seems to be moving at such an absolutely rapid pace at the moment.
We've got the January transfer window ending in 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be recording a podcast for that on that Tuesday. So, lots of exciting things to get into. Reviewing the Premier League from the last week. Obviously, Arsenal lost to Man United. I was supposed to be going to that game, but didn't
Arsenal
end up
beat
happening.
Man United.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah, I meant Arsenal beat Man United, unfortunately.
I'll tell you what, it was a cracking game to watch, though. It was really... No. Obviously, putting our United biases aside, it was a fantastic game.
It was.
Really, really good. And it's so strange because, you know, it's not, you know, Saturday lunchtime kickoff was Liverpool-Chelsea. And I predicted in the episode that got left on the cutting room floor, I predicted that was going to be a drab 0-0. And I was absolutely spot on.
We can go over those predictions as well.
Yeah, I mean, we only made a few of them before everything went completely haywire. But Liverpool-Chelsea, you had also predicted a draw, but you predicted a 2-2. Mr. Jennings had given us 3-1 and Edge had backed Liverpool to win. But obviously, I got the correct score on that one. We Bournemouth-Nottingham Forest, as something dings. It was probably me, I think. It was me, yes. Apologies for that. I'm going to switch my sound off now. Bournemouth-Nottingham Forest, you predicted an away win 2-1. Mr. Jennings predicted a draw 2-2, and I predicted a 3-2 Bournemouth win. Edge predicted Bournemouth win, and it was a 1-1 draw.
Mr. Jennings getting the right
results. Some points, but not all the points. And the only other game we got to before everything went absolutely bonkers was Leicester-Brighton, which you predicted was going to be a thumping Brighton win 4-0.
It was a 2-2 draw.
Yeah, Mr. Jennings and I both predicted 2-1 to Leicester.
So none of us got that.
So none of us got points. I feel a little bit cheap putting that on the scorecard for the rest of the term. So we're going to leave that one and pretend that, you know, that was a dummy run.
What are the scores on the door so far this term?
That means we've only got week one predictions so far. Wow. So at the moment, you've got 9 points from that week. And the rest of the world, which was my scores, got 14 that week.
A lot of work for me to do. Hopefully European football in my
Well, yeah, this is going to be a good week for you because you are, I think you're better at European football than we are. And of course, there's no Premier League fixtures this weekend because we're still in the thralls of the FA Cup.
Man United to play Reading tomorrow night. And dare I say anything else, less than a win would be... We'd be subpar.
It would be subpar, but there was. I did want to bring this up today. The knock-on effect of this Winter World Cup, which in footballing terms was fantastic, has been that the fixture congestion is at an all-time high, particularly in the Premier League, and I think Man United are the worst recipients of it because there's a graph comparing the potential paths to the League Cup final for Man United and Newcastle, the winners of both the first legs. And Newcastle, I think, play pretty much every 6 days or so. They've got a couple of week breaks, and I think they've got one midweek fixture as well. in the run-up to the league, from now to the League Cup final, Man United in that time are playing, I think, the most gap they get is 3 days between matches. And that's potentially going to run for 4 months. That is absolutely insane.
I do think United will do business before Tuesday.
I'm not sure. I don't know what money they've got at the moment.
Might just be a loan deal or a free transfer or something.
Well, maybe. I think free transfers are criminally underrated. But this is getting to a really daft point. It's really, really absurd now. And sure, you can make arguments about, well, they should just promote young players and it'll, give young players game time. But this is the Premier League and this is the FA Cup and this is European
football.
And it's
Man United at the end of the day. Man United is...
It is, but even taking that out of the question, you should always... There is a rule in the FA handbook that says you should always field the strongest team you can. And of course it allows for rotation and all of that. So I've just hit my mic because I'm so agitated by this. But... This is getting to a really absurd point now. If you watched, which game was it that they looked absolutely sluggish in? I don't even remember. I do remember watching
Palace.
I think it was the Palace game. Yeah, and you could see it already catching up to them. And even watching the Forest game in midweek in the cup, you could see that there was just so much fatigue in those legs. Absolutely, I do not envy them. This is, we talk a lot about, players getting wages that don't reflect their value to society or what have you. No, I think people will have sympathy for footballers playing 90 minutes of top flight, competitive, 110% football every third day for 4 months.
Part and parcel of the job at the end of the day, though.
It is,
And they would have been aware of it with the World Cup. But
well, they haven't really had a choice in it.
True.
That's I think, is the big issue for me, is that this has all happened without club consent.
Yep.
Whether the clubs would have forced it to move away from Qatar, I don't know.
It was a great World Cup nonetheless.
It was. It was a fantastic World Cup for football. It was... really, really enjoyable football pretty much throughout, aside from a few drab group stage games. But
true.
There's always that in any kind of global or European or continental competition. But yeah, it's having a real, real effect. And I'm seeing people tipping United to finish second in the league now. I think that was that Gary Neville that said that on Monday Night Football.
Above Arsenal as well. I don't really pay attention to any of the pundits, if I'm being honest.
No, I think that's nonsense.
I think they were great players, but because you're a great football player doesn't mean you have a great knowledge of the game.
Mm.
I think it was Etienne Capoue who famously said, apart from playing football, he doesn't follow the sport at all. So
yeah, and that's completely valid. It's like Gareth Bale. He's Wales, Golf, Madrid in that order.
And he's going to be playing the PGA, so best of luck to Gareth.
He is.
If he's listening.
He's playing the Pro-Am, I think, this weekend. And he's apparently been given 2 strokes because he's technically an amateur. But apparently he's been... John Rahm's been playing with him and he's almost as good as the pros already.
And speaking of Gareth Bale, today's team that we're going to break down is Real Madrid, because Los Blancos obviously beat Atletico Madrid after extra time in the Copa del Rey quarter-final. But Real Madrid looking very out of form and off colour recently.
Yeah, and I'll just jump in here and say, I don't know if you've seen this, but the Atletico Ultras.
Yeah, the effigy of Vinicius Jr.
Absolutely disgraceful.
But then again, it's free motivation for Vinicius Jr., right?
It is, but that doesn't excuse...
We don't condone that, obviously.
Yeah. I won't go into what they've done because it's actually pretty dark stuff they've done. But yeah, they've got to clamp down on that at some point. Madrid have gone through that phase of clamping down on their ultras. Barcelona, for what ultras they had, they clamped down on them and got rid of that lot. And Atletico, I think, are very much in the thralls of them. Apparently, they're still getting meetings with coaching staff and players because of their dedication to the club, or however they want to phrase it. But I do think something needs to be done about that, because that is really, really not on.
I completely agree. And I think ever since Madrid have come back from the World Cup, they haven't looked very good at all.
Real Madrid, yes.
I mean, Atletico Madrid are very attritional, to be honest. It's more...
The team I absolutely hate being drawn against more than any other team.
United should have beaten them last season.
It's absolutely... Every time, I don't know if you get this, every time I see Man U drawn against Atletico Madrid, I just go, oh no.
That was once. But let me get up Real Madrid's form at the moment. So they're linked with their former left back, Fran Garcia from Rayo Vallecano. I don't know much about him, but they're going to sign him for about 5 million euros because they have a buyback clause. Mm. And ultimately, Ferland Mendy's not doing the job. So. If I look, actually, I want to look at this.
Remind me, which side does he play on?
Left.
Because they've got David Alaba in their squad. I know he's not got the pace he used to have, but he's played most of his career as a fullback.
True.
I wouldn't have been surprised if they tried moving him out there and seeing if that would do the
job. Apparently, he didn't want to play there. So,
oh, fair enough.
He prefers playing centre half. So I'm looking at their squad at the moment. We've got it on screen here.
Mm.
Real Madrid, since coming back, have had pretty bad form. They lost 3-2 to the aforementioned Rayo Vallecano, 2-1 to Villarreal, who they haven't beaten at away from home in a while. They drew against Girona, and that was in October, actually. So since coming back from the World Cup...
Well, of course, they had the Supercopa.
Yep. Thumping loss to...
With that fantastic Xavi-masterminded Barcelona display.
I think I saw a statistic where Barcelona joint second in terms of clean sheets.
I think, yeah. It's,
with
it's,
Manchester United and Newcastle
then, yeah,
atop.
Yeah, Newcastle atop. You know, Nick Pope is having a wonderful time in that Newcastle goal at the moment, because they're looking so good. I think Newcastle they're locked on for the top four at this point. I cannot see them falling out of it because they're the ones who don't have to deal with European football.
True. And if we're looking at the Real Madrid squad, so we've got... It's a pretty thin squad. You've got Courtois, Lunin as your goalkeepers. Carvajal, who's aging out at the moment. So Militao, Alaba, Jesus Vallejo, who's probably going to depart. Nacho will depart. Eden Hazard. Kroos, Modric at the end of their contracts. Benzema will sign a new one, I believe. Asensio's up in the air. You've got Odriozola, who's not up to scratch. Vasquez, Ceballos. So the team that won the Champions League last year... It's still a very, very thin squad.
Mm. I'm curious about this because, like you said, Kroos and Modric are nearing the end of their contracts. Now that they have Camavinga and Valverde and Tchouameni and Ceballos even, what would you do with Kroos and Modric? Would you try and cash in on them now?
I don't think you'd cash in on them exactly in that sense. I would say you definitely have to get one midfielder in the summer and give Camavinga an extended role in the side. They do have a youngster coming through from Castilla called Mario Martin, who's a defensive midfielder who played for them in the Supercopa.
Mm.
They have Sergio Arribas coming through as well, as more of an attacking midfielder. So Madrid do have some good youngsters coming through. Nico Paz as well. Vinicius Tobias, whose future is up in the air. Right back signed from Shakhtar Donetsk. They do have Brahim Diaz out on loan at AC Milan. So... He could be an attacking option if Asensio does depart. It looks like he might go to Barcelona. The reverse Luis Figo or the Luis Enrique.
It's curious because Kroos and Modric are two, you know, if you want to bring up a central midfielder, if you want them to have the best tuition in world football, you couldn't go too far wrong with Toni Kroos and Luka Modric.
Exactly.
But at that point, I shudder to think how much they're paying them in wages, because it's probably quite a lot, unless they're on Arsenal deals where it's 80k a week plus 15 million for every match they play or whatever it is at this point. That's the Chelsea deal, isn't it?
Yeah.
The expenditure surely must come into play at some point.
So, Real Madrid's wage package, do you want to have a guess who's top?
Of all of these, I reckon it could be Thibaut Courtois.
No.
No?
It's Eden Hazard.
Oh, yeah, Eden Hazard.
According to this website that we've got, two different figures here. And I'm going to go with this one because I've used this before. Eden Hazard is on a gross salary of 600,000 euros a week.
Oh.
Kroos is second with 470,000. Benzema's third. Alaba's also on 400 grand a week. Modric's on 400 grand. Vinicius Jr.'s on 400 grand a week.
400 grand a week?
That's gross. That's pre-tax.
All the same. So hang on. So that's... How many players they got over at or over 400k a week then?
One, two, three, four, five, six.
Six?
If we look at Barcelona, see, this is what the Spanish teams are not very talked about in terms of salary. If we look at Barcelona, De Jong is on 700 grand a week, pre-tax. Pre-tax in euros. Busquets is on 700 as well, allegedly. And then you've got Lewandowski and Alba. And then you have Ansu Fati on 200, Koundé on 200, Rafinha on 240, Dembele on 230. It's no wonder Barcelona want to reduce his wages.
Well, yeah, no kidding. That's
if you look at Atletico Madrid,
insane.
Oblak's on 400 apparently.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by that. Oblak is a world-class keeper.
He is a very, very good goalkeeper, but he has regressed significantly.
Well, he has, yeah, but you know, Oblak from I imagine that contract was signed a couple of years ago now. No, probably pre-pandemic, Jan Oblak was one of the best keepers in world football.
And if we look at a team, we'll stick to Real Madrid for this one. Ultimately, I think they need fullbacks, left and right backs. Mendy could come to the Premier League. Also, they have Mariano Diaz, who probably leave on a free. Probably a good striker for someone like Bournemouth. But Dani Ceballos might even leave on a free, but he's a good backup midfield option. So the Real Madrid squad is very, very thin.
It is. I scrolled through it a moment ago and just went, wait, is that it?
Yeah.
Because they haven't actually, they've not got a tremendous amount of cover, really. They've just about got two in every position up top. They've got...
But not of quality, that's the thing.
No, I mean, no disrespect to Mariano, but he's not the same league as Vinicius Jr. or Karim Benzema.
Or even Rodrigo.
Or even Rodrigo. No, I do like Rodrigo. I think he has too many inconsistent games, but I do think he's a fantastic player, yeah.
So if we're looking at errors, I'd probably go left back, right back. I'd definitely get a central midfielder in. And another forward, really. Probably a striker to alleviate, or someone who can play across the front line.
Mm. I'd also be tempted, actually, just to throw a reserve keeper in here, like Man United have done with Jack Butland.
They got Andre Lunin, though.
They have, but that's only two keepers, and I don't know what the Real Madrid goalkeeping prospects...
They've got Lucas Caniceres as well coming through.
Oh, have they? Okay, yeah. I couldn't see
son
the
of
youth
Santiago,
prospects.
Son of Santiago Caniceres, former goalkeeper for Real Madrid, who's apparently a rally driver. Interesting.
Oh, more you know.
You learn something new every day. The only Brazilian star who's not really doing pulling trees up is Rainier, so ultimately it's something that they will look to repeat in terms of Rodrigo and Vinicius with Endrick in 2 years' time. So we also have to bear that in mind.
Okay, so if you were... So looking at this, so you said fullbacks, left and right, and striker.
Fullback, striker, central midfielder, and a centre-half.
Okay, so that's... Let's call that five players.
Five, six players.
Are you doing that in addition to the current squad, or are you getting rid of players to do that as well?
I'm getting rid of some players. So we're going to cut Odriozola. Mm-hmm. We're going to cut Vallejo, Hazard. That's three.
Where do you think Hazard would go at this point?
MLS.
Well, that's a reasonable point, actually. Yeah. Or, of course, Saudi League, now that Saudi League are starting paying the big bucks to people.
You never know. You might see Hazard, Modric rocking up at Al Nassr alongside Ronaldo. Although Al Nassr were terrible yesterday. I watched a little bit. They were absolutely terrible.
It's strange.
It's the level is comparable to League 2, if I'm being dead honest. I've watched a little bit of League 2, and I think League 2 is actually better.
It's an interesting thing, isn't it? Because, you know, we watched Saudi Arabia at the World Cup, and we watched Qatar at the World Cup, and they looked all right. And
but that was international football was weaker than club football.
It is, absolutely. I agree with that. But that also applies to those teams as well. They won't have had as much time to, well, they actually probably won't have had quite a bit of time to gel. But there's still a point to be made there, and it's a little disheartening when you follow a country in a tournament and go, oh, I want to catch more of that country's football, and you go in and it's just a little bit rubbish.
Yeah. So I'll give Real Madrid a budget of 400 million in the summer. Two to 300 million, actually, if I'm being conservative.
Is that through player sales, or that's just a...
Pre-player sales. Yeah. So Mariano will walk for free. I'd renew Asensio's contract and keep him as a backup attacker. And if he wanted to go, I would get rid. I'd just say, okay, you can leave on a free. Madrid have had a history of letting big players go.
Mm.
Ramos, Casemiro, Cristiano Ronaldo. I'd keep Nacho. I just think Nacho is probably a good character to have around the squad and also can play multiple positions. So Vallejo's gone. That means another centre-back is needed. Skriniar's going to PSG. That's no secret. I would look to get a younger centre-back.
Mm.
Possibly even left-footed. So I'd go for someone. Guardiola is going to be very, very expensive. So we're not going to go for him.
But if you did get rid of one of your Kroos or Modric, you could fund Guardiola without even thinking about it.
True. And actually, this is where it gets hard.
Yeah. This is what all of my Real Madrid choices boil down to, is what do you do with Kroos and Modric?
So I think, let's keep it this way. We've got about sort of 5-7 minutes left, but Kroos, if he retires, then you get Jude Bellingham, and ultimately you bet him in. I think Tchouaméni, Camavinga, Bellingham. You also have Valverde covering it. On the right, in midfield. So I think Jude Bellingham would be my central midfield signing. I would promote a few youngsters from Castilla. And if Asensio left, I'd bring Brahim Diaz back straight away as a bench option. I would, as a striker, bearing in mind Endrick is going to be coming in 18 months' time, but then again, he will only be 18 years old.
Mm.
I'd look for someone who can do it now and also in the future as a rotation option. And therefore, I'm led to... I've seen Osimhen linked, and that would be frightening.
Yeah, it would. I'm not personally convinced by that.
I don't know
where he's going to end up, actually, but something doesn't quite ring right about him going to Madrid to me.
You know what? We'll say Harry Kane. I think Harry Kane would be perfect for another 2-3 years as a Benzema, a younger version of Benzema.
Mm, yeah, that's a really good point, actually.
And ultimately, he would be that, I'm going to say stopgap, between Benzema and Endrick. Because, in my opinion, Endrick will be the main man at Real Madrid. And Real Madrid have gone away from the Galactico strategy from, I remember 2016-17 when they had Bale, maybe the season before that, Bale, James, Ronaldo, Benzema. They had, absolutely wonderful, wonderful team.
It was something else, that team.
So Jude Bellingham, I'd probably get a more cost-effective striker, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, that's fair.
Let's also look at the free market, not the flea market, the free market.
While you're doing that, I said this during the World Cup. You know, any club worth their salt should be trying to put in a bid of 100 million plus for Jude Bellingham this summer.
Yeah.
There are very, very, very few squads, and I'm not sure I could think of them right now, that wouldn't benefit from having him as a first-choice starter.
So I'd look at someone like Roberto Firmino could be a half-decent option.
Actually, that's a really good shout. If Liverpool do look to revitalise their squad, as it seems that Jurgen Klopp's suggesting that might happen, if it does happen, then fair play to him. I'm personally not convinced by that. I think that... I wonder if he might go soon, you know. I think he might leave by mutual consent.
Wow.
I don't think this season, but I think he might go maybe in the summer.
You know, actually, I'm going to revise that, my Harry Kane. I'm going Rafael Leao as the striker.
Oh, no, that's a perfect pick, actually. That's
Rafael
really,
Leao
really
is my attacking pick because he can rotate off the left. You can play through the middle, and ultimately you've got a very rotational and interchangeable front three. Because I was looking at 2024, and Rafael Leao's deal expires in 2024.
Yeah. How does Vinicius play up top if he was to sort of play in that forward striker role.
So Leao would start there, and then ultimately you just interchange between him, Vinicius, and Rodrigo.
Mm.
Sort of false nine-ish.
Oh, that's a terrifying front three.
Very, very powerful front three.
I'd hate playing against any top-class team, but that would be scary.
It would be truly, truly scary. I would say, in terms of left-back, I'm going to throw in a rogue shout here. I know they'll probably get Fran Garcia. I'm going to go Alex Grimaldo from Benfica on a free.
Yeah, oh, that's a great shout. Because it's a free, it doesn't really matter that it's probably not the perfect pick long-term.
True. He is 27, 28, and then ultimately they can bring Fran Garcia back. They can look to buy Alphonso Davies, as they've been rumoured to do so in 2024.
Yeah.
Wow, what a summer that would be in 2024. Davies, Endrick. My right-back pick is going to be a weird one.
Mm.
And you're probably going to be thinking, why? But it's going to be Trent Alexander-Arnold. It's going to be very, very expensive, granted.
Mm.
So realistically not happen. I am just playing career mode in my head at the moment. But if we're being realistic, a right-back is definitely needed.
What do you think that right-back needs to bring to the team? Because I've just had a really weird thought.
Go on.
And I don't think it'll be the worst business in the world if Real Madrid signed Aaron Wan-Bissaka.
I shouldn't be laughing, but I'll be dead honest. I don't think technically the Premier League is way off La Liga in terms of the technical requirements, and if Wan-Bissaka can't cut it in the Premier League, then no chance.
I don't think if they only need a defensive fullback, I actually think he'd be a really good shout, because he can deal with, you know, he's one of the best one-on-one defenders in the world.
Yeah,
he still is. You know, we saw it with that fantastic tackle.
But he switches off at the back. He's only one-on-one.
He switches off
the back post.
And I'm not disputing that. You know, he's not a perfect option by any means. But I think that he'll probably be available fairly cheaply soon. And if they just need someone to kill a bit of time, he's still, I'm not sure I'd call him an elite player, but he's still a very good player.
He's a good player, but I don't think he quite fits. So if we're looking at right backs, and this is sort of 2020-odd, I'd probably go for Malo Gusto, actually. Lyon player, ultimately one of the Real Madrid fullbacks, they have to be technically very, very good on the ball.
Mm.
So I think Malo Gusto for about 30. So Malo Gusto would be 30. Jude Bellingham would be about 100. Obviously spread over the years of their contract. Yeah. But at the same time,
but of course, up to 5 years now. Yeah. You're even looking at changing the rules on that.
I'd also go for Rafael Leao. So that's about 100, 100, 200, 230. Grimaldo on a free. And I'm looking at centre backs right now.
Mm.
I want to see what kind of centre backs are on the market.
Go full meme and get Harry Maguire.
No chance. Okay.
Harry Maguire, but he can't lead anyone because he doesn't speak Spanish. Does he speak Spanish? I don't assume he does.
No, he does. Harry Maguire?
Yeah.
No.
Okay, good. I just wanted to check.
You know what? I'll say this. Roger Banez from Roma. Pretty decent centre-back. Decent on the ball, good in the air. I think he'd be a very, very good backup. Maybe even Axel De Sassi from Monaco. And I'm also going to throw in a rogue shout here of Yuen Timber, perhaps. Why not? Yuen Timber, younger centre-back.
Mm.
Obviously, Josko Gvardiol is the...
He's the golden goose.
He's the golden goose. And you know what? In saying that, Real Madrid already have a left-footed centre-back in Alaba.
Mm.
And I don't really think they need someone else with that style.
How old is Alaba at this point? He's in his...
29, 30.
Yeah, I was going to say early 30s, but yeah.
He's still a wonderful, wonderful player.
Mm. Yeah, and at that age, you've probably got another 3 or 4 years, maybe 5 years left in him.
Exactly. And I'll be dead honest, I think Antonio Rudiger hasn't pulled up any trees. So in terms of, so as I said, right back, probably looking at... Wait, who did I mention for right back?
I think of Rudiger really was a strange piece of business for Chelsea in the end.
It was, but he hasn't pulled up any trees.
No, but he was...
Yeah, I said Malo Gusto for right back.
He did the same thing that Harry Maguire first did when he came to United. He was a defender who could progress the play. And I think, you know, having that extra body, you know, having a defender who can make that run forwards and draw a player out and change an opponent's shape, it's a shame it hasn't worked at Madrid, because, you know, theoretically, being able to pull a player out and then having your star players potentially one marking man down is absolutely lethal for Madrid.
Very but true.
If it hasn't worked out, then it hasn't worked out.
And if I'm being dead honest, why would you have Rüdiger progressing the ball when you have David Alaba as being one of the world's best players? At
also
it,
so. True, yes.
Malagusto, I go for Rafael Leão. I'd also be looking at, although there will be inevitable comparisons to Cristiano Ronaldo, I'd look at Jude Bellingham. I think those are the three players. If you can't get Jude Bellingham, I'd probably look at Enzo Fernandez. He might be more suitable to the squad.
Mm.
And then ultimately, I'd even go for a right winger. And actually, six players here, because I think I'm missing. Am I missing a position? I've said right back Malagusto, left back Grimaldo, Rafael Leão, Jude Bellingham, and my centre half. Who did I say my centre back was going to be?
Was it the Roma player?
Yeah, Roger Banez. That's five, and then
although you had talked about Guardiola as well.
Yeah, and then so that's five, and actually, I'm looking at this, and I might even look at Nico Williams from Atletico Madrid, an Athletic Club, because he's a very, very exciting young winger. And I think on the right-hand side, cutting infield, let me see if he's right-footed so I can get that right. He's right-footed, actually. Mm. He's right-footed. So more of a conventional winger option, although actually Bukayo Saka would be my next pick.
good luck getting him out of Arsenal.
I mean, 50 million, 60 million.
Arsenal wouldn't let him go that cheap.
Who's going to say no to Real Madrid, though? That's the idea. And ultimately, if you can get Bukayo Saka, otherwise you get Nico Williams. And then centre-back-wise, as I mentioned, Roger Banez, or even William Saliba, whose contract is expiring in 2024. So that's Real Madrid broken down, I believe.
I will. Can I just throw one more name in there? I'm curious what you think of this. Kieran Trippier,
okay. He's played for the red side of Madrid.
Mm.
They've got a similar-ish player in Dani Carvajal, can go both attack and defend. I think they just need a younger option at right back.
Yeah. Okay, that's fair enough. Yeah.
And he's just moved to the Premier League, back to the Premier League about a year ago, so would cost an arm and a leg.
Yes, he would.
And in terms of predictions, we're going to do rapid fire predictions. So we have got...
It's going to test my typing skills.
We'll start with the Bundesliga. Bayern Munich, Frankfurt. Edge have Bayern Munich to win. It's at the Allianz Arena. Mr. Ferguson, kick us off, please.
Well, when do you ever bet against Bayern Munich?
They did draw against Köln, though.
Well, they did, but they're still on a great streak at the moment.
Yeah.
I can't see this going any other way than a Bayern win, and I'm going to give them 3-0.
Frankfurt are second in the league, if I believe so. No, they're fourth.
Yeah.
I'm going to go for a 2-1 attritional Bayern Munich victory.
Okay.
And then on the 29th, so that is Sunday, I believe, you've got Leverkusen against Dortmund. Edge is back to Leverkusen. If Leverkusen do draw this game, their record will become a 7-4-7.
Did you say the Edge had Leverkusen?
Yes. And Dortmund are higher placed in the table. They're fifth.
Yeah, they are. And they're 7 points clear.
Yep. I would say I'm going to go against Edge. I'm going to back a Dortmund victory. I'm going to say 3-2 Dortmund.
Yeah, this feels like a strange pick from Edge. I'm curious to know what Edge's reasoning would be. I suppose home advantage, maybe. I don't know how Bayer Leverkusen's home record is, but this is strange because I would instinctively back Dortmund too. I'm going to give it to them 2-0.
We move on to La Liga, where we have, on the Sunday, Real Madrid, Real Sociedad. The battle of the royally ordained teams. Edge has Real Madrid to win. Sociedad have looked very good, but I'm going to go for... Actually, do you know what? I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw.
Yeah, I don't think that's a terrible shout. Both teams have been pretty good defensively. Look at this. Not obviously, Barcelona are a league of their own at the moment.
Yeah.
But to concede at only a goal a game for the whole season for both teams is pretty good going.
Well, Barcelona have only conceded six goals. Oh, yeah, for Sociedad and Madrid, 18. Barcelona have conceded six goals in 17 games.
Yeah.
Absolutely ridiculous.
The more I see of Barcelona, the more I'm getting excited for that Europa that Europa League, what's it, the knockout qualifier, whatever yeah. it is. But yes, Madrid, Sociedad. I'm going to go for Madrid win. I think it's the safer option here. I'm going to give it to them 2-1.
We move on to Serie A, where we have Lazio-Fiorentina live on BT Sport at 5 o'clock on the Sunday. But before we do that, we'll go Milan-Sassuolo, 11:30 on the Sunday. Milan having lost, not just lost, we're getting thumped by Lazio. I expect a reaction. I'm going to go for a 3-1 Milan victory. Edge also has AC Milan backed.
Yeah, and I'm again, it's easy to get a big club bias. So what did you get for your prediction?
I said 3-1 Milan.
3-1, yeah. It's easy to get big club bias, but I do think that they are the better team here. And I think Fiorentina aren't in a particularly great patch. Neither are Milan, to be fair to them.
We've got Milan-Sassuolo.
Oh, sorry, it's Sassuolo, isn't it? Yeah. Yes. Well, oh, even more the point then. Sassuolo on a terrible run.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can't see this being pretty, actually. I think it's going to be 4-0.
Wow. Lazio-Fiorentina. Lazio on the back of beating Milan 4-0. Maurizio Sarri's Lazio. So I'm actually going to go for... I'm going to for a draw here. I'm going to go a 2-2 draw, Lazio-Fiorentina. Edges Lazio to win, actually.
Yeah, I think when Lazio win, they seem to win big this season.
Yep.
Their goal difference is very handy. Second in the league after the all-conquering Napoli. And I think if they do win it, I think it'll be quite comfortable. Which is why I'm going for a 3-0 to Lazio.
And our final Serie A game, Napoli-Roma, 7:45. I'm backing a 2-1 Napoli victory.
Yeah, again, all-conquering Napoli. Roma on a good run. I won't dispute
Edge also that. Agrees with me in terms of backing Napoli.
Yeah, and again, it's because they are 12 points clear at the top of the league.
True.
It's very difficult to bet against that. It's a home fixture. You know what? You've got to predict an upset somewhere, because if you don't, then you're playing the coward's game.
Yeah.
I think this is going to be a one-all draw. Yeah.
Interesting. We move on to Ligue 1, our final league of this week. We've got the French Riviera Derby, Marseille-Monaco, 8 o'clock tomorrow. And I'm going to go for Edge backs Marseille. I'm going to go for a Marseille victory as well. I'm going to go for a 2-1 Marseille victory.
Yeah, Marseille in sparkling form, Monaco in good form, but there's a difference between the two. Monaco have been surprisingly free scoring this season, actually. I'm just looking at the table at the moment, and they've scored 42 goals in 19 games.
Second most after Paris Saint-Germain.
Yeah, that's pretty good going. And you know what? Because it is a derby, I think that does throw something into... It throws things up in the air a little bit. So I'm going to take Monaco 2-1.
Wow. Then... Tomorrow's games, I'm looking at this. Which games are worth predicting? 6-10, not really. Do we tokenistically throw PSG? No, we're not going to throw PSG in there. Let's go for the FA Cup, actually. I did mention to you off air, we didn't really care about cups, but there's some good games here. So, oh, Man City, Arsenal. Man City are favoured to win by edge, but I'm going to go for a 2-1 Manchester City victory.
I see your reasoning here.
Are you going for an Arsenal victory?
I'm going for an Arsenal victory. I'll spoil the result here. This screams to me of Guardiola bringing in the changes, bringing in a load of youngsters for cup experience, and Arsenal playing a fairly full-strength team. And I think Arsenal are going to do the business on them. Mm. I'm not going to go crazy, but I think it's going to be a... I'm going to go slightly crazy, actually. I'm going to go 3-1 Arsenal.
Wow. We're going to go for another other game, which is Manchester United against Reading. Edge probably has Man United backed as well.
Really? Shocking.
I'm going to go for a 3-0 Man United victory.
Yeah, and this is the other game. I almost wouldn't be surprised if there was an upset here too.
Yeah.
United still in 4 competitions, need to make changes.
Yep.
Otherwise, they are not going to have anything left in the tank when the league comes back again in next weekend. And I do slightly worry about this game because squad depth is not United's strong point.
Yeah.
I think they'll have enough, but I think it'll only be 1-0.
Interesting. So those are our predictions for the week. Thank you for listening. And we'll catch you next week. Take care. Peace.